T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yes, we are. Thank you for being with us on the Spiegel and Parkin Show, live from the bleachers at Wrigley Field. This segment brought to you by Cabela's. Cabela's summer clearance is going on now. From clothing to optics, come in and get savings up to 50% off. See all their deals at Cabela's.com. That was a historic call of a historic game by a historic player. Ryan Sandberg, the Hall of Famer, joins us in the bleachers right now. How's
good
it going,
to be with
Ryan?
You. It's great. Great to be out here in the bleachers, that's for sure.
Yeah, right? This isn't a bad spot, huh?
Not bad at all. Face and suit, a piece of cake. Piece of cake right there. Yeah. Had them all away. Dominant ground ball pitcher lifted 2 balls. That was the biggest thing.
Well, yeah.
Dominant ground ball pitcher.
Yeah.
With that pitch and to elevate 2. It was one of those things.
You could have done it again the next day, right? No problem.
I actually got him later in when he went to Atlanta after the Cardinals. got him after that. So it was
nice.
You know what? His split finger fastball ended up in my hot zone. Coming into me, so that's where I liked it. So it was one of those matchups that worked.
Just an absolutely devastating guy to go against at the time. He used to hold his thumb on the bottom of the split finger and spin it just a little bit, so it acted different than others, right?
It wasn't like a tumbling fork ball. It wasn't something that you'd see. It was more like a screwball.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he threw it and jumped at you and the velocity of that pitch and the dive of it. I mean, it was like hitting a wiffle ball in a windstorm, really. And it was actually one of the veteran players, I think it was either Buckner or Boa at the time, I think it was Boa, said, hey, this pitch will end up down and into you, swing underneath the baseball. Because that's where the pitch is going to be, and that's how you square the ball up. So it was one of those rare times in my career that I did aim for the bottom of the baseball rather than the top of the baseball, so it just happened to work out. At that point, I thought that there was nothing to lose, everything to win, and as it turns out, we did win that game. I believe we took over first place for the first time that year, 84, by half of a game.
Wow.
So it was also a big team win.
So you've done the coaching thing. So some great players who become coaches get frustrated with, like, why can't you do this? Like, I was able to do it. So you've got a scouting report on such a great pitcher. He's coming into your hot zone. Do you have teammates saying, like, how the hell are you hitting this thing?
In some regards. I mean, we talked about how to face different guys, and I had great teammates throughout the years. A couple of my favorites, Gary Matthews, who I hit in his same group every year batting practice. And we talk about 84, 85, 86. He would talk about who was throwing that day and how we're going to get after that guy, and really got me pumped up for the game during batting practice. And we took batting practice very seriously. We had different rounds of hitting the ball the other way, moving the runner, man on third, one out, get a sack fly. And we did that as groups, and we got really, really ready for the game. And if we didn't produce in BP, our 2 other guys that we were hitting with us were all over us. It didn't do the job. So you had to do the job in batting practice. And, you know, I think it was very, very good. But that came from the Sarge. Big influence on my career. Andre Dawson as a right-handed hitter up in the lineup. We shared notes on who was pitching that day. And I was up before him, so he would watch and see how the pitcher would face me. That my first at bat, and if I had some information coming back going by him, I'd tell him what the pitch was, what the velocity's like, and help each other out as teammates.
That's interesting, because there wasn't a lot of video, if any, at the time, right? And then I know Tony Gwynn was a big video guy, and that started spreading around the game, but actually using batting practice that aggressively does not happen in the same way these days. Because they have the video and they have all the other stuff.
Most of my career, there was video, but it wasn't good video, and we never even looked at it. Because it was a camera guy set up over by the dugout, a side view, couldn't see the pitch. We got more use out of going in and looking at the monitors up on the game being telecast back then on WGN and just watch a couple of pitches going in there, see what the fastball was doing that day, see the movement, and just watching a couple of batters, and we'd go in rush into the locker room in there and look at a couple hitters and rush back out, and then that was it for the rest of the day.
So that's the video work they did, is watch a couple pitches on the TV broadcast.
A little different.
Yeah. And then see the ball hit. And you know what, though? We kept it simple, which, you know.
You had to.
And I, when I have a chance to talk to hitters, what I talk about keeping it simple, you know, what's his fastball doing? Is it tailing into you? Is it cutting away? What is his action on his fastball? Because that's a reaction pitch. You don't have time to think. You just react to it, but you need to know what it's doing that day and what that pitcher has for his fastball. What's his breaking ball? Does he have a curveball and a slider? What are those like? And then what's his out pitch with two strikes? Does he have a trick pitch? So those are the three things that we would talk about amongst our teammates. We'd go out and play the game. We'd see the ball and hit it. We'd work the count. When we were heading the count, that's when we tried to do damage and be ready to really swing the bat when we were ahead of the count. And that's kind of the way that we did things.
Keeping it simple.
Yeah, man.
Cubs could use some of that. Ryan Sandberg with us here at Wrigley Field in the bleachers. Of course, you can hear him with Mark Brody right here on the Score after Cubs home games. It's been fun hearing you do some post-game work. Have you ever watched a game from the bleachers?
I've watched one game. It was after I retired and came out and sat here in left center field.
One game. So you've watched one game from out
one
here.
One game out here. Yeah, I love the vantage point. I mean, I love this setup right here today. We're elevated up here, even with the Jumbotron up here. But great view. I mean, you're right on top of the outfielders here looking down at it. But I remember that. And I also remember getting involved with the passing of the cup routine. You put some dollars in there, and the ball ended up on the mound, on the dirt area of the mound in between innings, if you had the cup that time, you won it.
Yes.
So you played that day, and that's a game that was going on then that you don't see today because the balls are getting thrown into the stands and a new ball is coming out from the umpire most of the time.
That's true.
I've played that game.
I didn't win. Yeah. I didn't win when I had the cup, but it was, I think it was $5 in there, and if the outfielder happened to toss it in there, or the infielder, or the catcher throwing it out after the last out's made, and it lands on the mound, and you won. So that was going on that day.
That's pretty awesome. You know, I mean, a lot has changed around here, obviously, but this is still your ballpark. Does it feel like your ballpark? And like, when you look around this place,
no, it's the same thing. I mean, it's the same. It's the same venue. Same look.
Uh-huh. So when you see a certain spot on this field, like, do you think about, oh, I made a play there? Like, if I were to point out a spot behind second base there, can you think of a play you made up the middle?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The view is the same for me. Looking from, I have two seats behind home plate. Looking out, it's the same view as standing in there in the batter's box. What I like about it is the fact that there isn't too much advertising going on. I like the action of the big screen. I would have loved to have these big screens out here and showing the in-between innings, showing highlights of the Billy Williams and the Ernie Banks, Ron Santo back in the day. I would have enjoyed watching that. I enjoy the music and the liveliness that's going on with the new sound system and everything. But other than that, minimal advertising here. It's green seats. It's green ivy. You see the baseball very well, and that hasn't changed too much. So I love that.
It'd be kind of like going back to a house where you grew up, Danny, or something. Like, oh,
sure.
Yeah, I lived here. This was my place. That's how he gets to look at this ballpark. It's my place.
Yeah, it's cool. Cooler than, like, oh, I played hide-and-seek, and that was my spot. that is a much cooler thing.
I still check the flags. Every time I come, I check the flags because of the player. That was the first thing I looked at.
That's
awesome. From the route, if I was living downtown or up north back in the day, there was the route that we would take, and you'd be a little carpool of a couple of guys, me, Sutcliffe, and Jody Davis, for instance, driving in. But way up on the toll road up by O'Hare, we had a couple of flags that we would check initially there. And then halfway down the Kennedy, we'd check a flag there that we had up on a bank or something. Then coming into town closer just to see what way the wind was blowing, just to get the mindset of what type of a game it could be. And those days where it was blowing out to left field line or left center or straight out, we get a little bit more excited about the at-bats that we might have, and we just set our mindset then.
I mean, I would feel like they all say, you know, you try not to do it. We look at the flags. But when it was blowing out in your power alley, you're trying to hit home runs, right? Because I would.
No, I never did.
I would.
Oh. No. I was trying to, you know what? I was trying to make contact. Four or five at-bats, make contact. I never swung up at the baseball, or I felt I never did.
Except for the Suter times, you were saying.
Except for that, underneath. Other than that, I was aiming for the top half of the baseball, resulting in line drives. Mm-hmm. And if I got underneath a little bit, those low two irons going out of the ballpark or the home runs. But my goal on a yearly basis was to hit 300. And to do that, I needed to stay on top of the baseball, drive it, use the whole field, hit for high average. And those days at Wrigley Field when it was blowing out or favoring a right-handed bat, I wanted to not miss my pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, I had to mentally shorten up just a little bit and just what we would call play hard pepper, and that's just squaring the ball up. A lot of us players in our day, we played pepper, so that was this game of just bat control, using the whole field, hitting the ball the other way. Type of a stroke, and when you got six guys lined up there out on the foul line and you're playing pepper, you get a chance to hit to this guy over here to the right, this guy to the left, and you have to control your hands and the head of the bat to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also making contact with the ball. So on those days, I wanted to avoid the strikeout. I wanted to be ready every pitch for my pitch and not miss it.
Talking to Ryan Sandberg here in the bleachers on the score. So what do you think with a guy like Chris Bryant's pronounced uppercut swing? It's just so different.
And it works all over the game. There's so many guys.
And that's everywhere.
There is a lot of that. And I saw that when I was managing about the players hitting underneath the baseball. And you know what? If it works, and I think it works for Chris Bryant because he does result in some good hard line drives, and he gets some base hits. But you know, he's strong enough, and I believe his theory is that he's strong enough if he connects it correctly the way he wants to. There's only three outfielders out there. There's three fielders, and there's a lot of space out there. He has the ability to drive the ball out of any part of the ballpark. I didn't feel like I had that kind of a power. Opposite field, I wanted to stay in the gaps. I wanted to stay down the right field line on a line. I wanted to get my base hits to right field if those pitches were out there. The other thing that I like about Chris Bryant this year is he really looked at what he did last year and what his strengths were, and I think he recognized what his weaknesses were, and that were some certain pitches away. He worked all winter and all spring training about working to right center field and working on those outside pitches, and he's shown it throughout this first half of the season. So he's a guy that I think is really, really heads-up player. He's going to work on what he has to do to be a complete player and stay a complete player. Just missing the All-Star game up to this point, you know what? He's one of the players that has been fairly consistent this first half of the season.
He's Ryan Sandberg, and he talks a lot more now than he did as a player. I remember you being on
post-game show with Mark.
Well, he's all over the place. But Ryan, I remember you being on the radio station on the score. You know, towards the end, and certainly in the early years, and it's like. Did you have an edge? Did you have like an edge to you as a player that has dissipated a little bit now? And was that edge useful for you to be a little bit, if not angry, just a little maybe stubborn or private? You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. Looking back at it, I came up in an era where you didn't talk too much about yourself. You weren't out there every day. To do a pregame show was like a big deal because now you're going to talk about how well you're doing on the baseball field, and you know you're red hot. How you doing? I wanted to avoid that because this is baseball, and I know how it can turn in a second.
Hmm.
Where if I was red hot, I did not want to talk to anybody about it. I just wanted to continue and see how long I could stay hot because I loved it, and the team was doing better, and that's the way that I wanted to do. Now, I believe that there was less talk back then about those things, and there. Things were more private back then. They really were. After a big game, I'd come into the locker room or whoever did something that game. There'd be three cameras and three or four beat writers. First question would be, what was that pitch you hit? What were you thinking in that moment? That was about it.
Good night, everybody.
That was it. I mean, it wasn't about your personal life. It wasn't about what you like to do off the field. It was different back then.
Yeah.
And as players, we did not go around, and I didn't come up with a bunch of teammates and guys where that's you talked about yourself a lot. So that I took to that. It kind of fit with my game. It also allowed me to keep my focus on what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
and not jinx myself. Like I said, if I was hot...
Were you superstitious?
In some regards. In some regards, as far as a routine. I really stuck to a routine almost to a T.
You did.
I didn't like to mess with it. Oh, if I was 2 minutes late to the ballpark, that drove me nuts.
What was your arrival
two
time?
2 minutes... Oh, it's 8:39 in the morning. I mean, I'm 5 hours before the game, but that's 2 minutes late from what I've been doing.
Wow.
And if I'm red hot, that would bother me. So I didn't like to mess with things when I was going well.
Did you eat the same thing? Were you a guy who ate the same thing all the time?
I tried to stick for a routine like that. Yeah, at times I'd eat the same thing.
I don't remember,
same route
I don't remember a Turk Wendell, like, shark tooth necklace around your neck or anything like that.
No, I didn't have anything like that going on.
Did you jump over the sideline? Were you a guy who didn't want to touch the...
No, I didn't worry about that.
Okay. You'd step on the chalk? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
But the routine, 2 minutes late, was a problem.
That was a problem with me. Doing a pregame show where I'd normally be out running sprints and playing catch, preparing for the game and getting mentally ready for the game. Maybe I was hitting 400 for a month, and now Steve Stone or Harry Carey wants to do a pregame show right down there on the field in front of the fans moments before the first pitch. That took me out of my routine. Mm-hmm. Now, would I adjust it today and do what the players do, and there's more asked of them? You have to, and the players have to do that. And I think they're more polished to do that because they learn that in the minor leagues. In the minor leagues, we didn't have any media at all. So 82 came on the scene and got adjusted to Chicago and Wrigley Field and the history of the Cubs. And then 84 hit and thrown into that. And now news teams wanted to come over to the house and do for the 10 o'clock news. That was out of my routine.
Mm-hmm.
But the tension was fun. And then just walking around and having everybody recognize you. And now talking in front of the media on the road, I was the guy that they would want to talk to and see how things were going. But that was all new to me. So I think in today's players, they're more polished doing that. They're more practiced doing that. And I think that's where I've done some things in the past. You know, going in the Hall of Fame was a big stage. And
yep.
And then
now post game's right here on the
post game. Post game, managing, coaching in spring training, like I did after I retired. There was some teaching there and things. So things have changed since mm-hmm. being a player. But I had my way as a player that I felt I had to stick to be successful.
I wanted to ask you this in Vegas. You were at our event, and there were so many people coming up to you wearing your jersey. Is that weird? I always wonder. Like, is it weird seeing like guys? 300 pounds, 5'7".
I think it's pretty cool.
You think it's cool?
Yeah, I have a routine because I come to all the home games here, and I from the parking, from where I park across the street, if I see someone or leaving the game or going to get a concession stands, if I happen to see one, every now and then I'll tap them on the shoulder, "Where'd you get that jersey?" And then they'll turn around, "Oh, I got it," and they'll start saying where they got it. Then they'll look at me and they'll bust up. So
yeah, have you ever like had a conversation about like that Sandberg guy? It's pretty good.
Well,
like, yeah, it was
well,
fun.
Well, last year we had some friends here and we were watching the game and there was a guy that had a Sandberg jersey two rows ahead and he was standing up a lot. And finally, I yelled, "Hey, Sandberg, down in front!" And he turned around and was getting ready to do fisticuffs. And all of a sudden, he saw me and he busted up laughing. So then he sat down for the rest of the game.
And then he sat down for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Damn right he did.
Yeah, he can't be blocking Ryan Sandberg. I was wondering that.
You didn't want to walk up to a guy in your own jersey.
Yeah. Hey, it's a good look. It's a good look on you. It looked better on me, though.
All right, so look out at these bleachers. Tell me a home run or a game that comes to mind, but a homer that you hit in this ballpark. Like, what's, do you see a spot where you remember the ball going either into the basket or
into
the stands?
I think those two against Bruce Sutter, I bet that they were probably 10 feet apart, just right over here, left center. I'm not sure where the 368 sign is, but both those were the same swing, same pitch, same swing, same mm-hmm. game. And I believe they landed about 10 feet apart. So I think those two, very big. Also, just thinking about a teammate, Jody Davis in 84 against Dwight Gooden with the bases loaded hit this camera booth that we're next to right here in the air for a grand slam.
Straight center.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And then when Andre Dawson hit his 49th here, that was pretty special also that year.
Wow.
1987, the Hawk onto an MVP year. Just seemed like, I mean, he had 49 home runs, which is a ton 49 home runs is a lot of runs, and it just being in front of him and just being on his team and watching him do that, it felt like he hit one every other day as often that he did. But I remember his last one here against a big, tall right-hander.
What's the farthest one you hit up here? Do you remember?
Yeah, I short, not short hop, but I hit the building down the line here, right field. And that was off of Doc Gooden, wind blowing straight out.
In left, you mean?
Yeah, in left field.
So
the one
Glenn Allen Hill put it on top of that.
Yeah, building? I hit somewhere down on the first floor. That was my longest ball.
Wow.
Here. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You remember that game where we had you play when you did you recorded stuff for 15 seconds at a time and you can name as many things
yes.
as possible. You remember that?
Well, yeah, I struggled.
So we played the other day. You go an 0-for on current White Sox players.
I know. Yeah.
And, well, then we played it for Fergie Jenkins.
Yes.
He named zero also.
Did he?
Yeah. So you're in Hall of Fame company again with Fergie on naming current.
So we're going to bring Jose Abreu by and introduce him to you guys.
No, I know him. I know him. That was early on in the season, by the way.
Understood.
Yeah, no, of course. I just wanted to let you know, no harm, no foul, you and Fergie.
Okay, I like it.
Thank you very much for coming out here to the bleachers and being a friend of the show and the station.
Absolutely, Big three games here against the Pirates. I think it's, I end on a good note. Going into the break, I think it's very important for this club to send a message to themselves, and so I think this is a big three-game series for the Cubs. I really do. We just saw what the Brewers have, and they've shown it all year, so I think they're legit. I think they're legit, so the Cubs have to do something different. I remember as a ball player playing hard to the All-Star break, getting those days off, and then as a group coming a little bit more refreshed and focused on what the goal is at the end of the season. And regrouping and having that goal and getting everybody back on page. It's only 70 games after the break. It's not the halfway point. There's not 81 games left. There's about 70, if I'm right.
70, 69. 74. I think they got 77 left starting today.
So it's in the 70s. So a lot of time left, but things have to be done differently for the Cubs, and that's the guys really stepping up to their potential.
The Hall of Famer. Ryan Sandberg.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Appreciate it.
You'll hear him doing postgame with Mark Grody right after the game.
That's right. All home games right here on The Score. If you missed Theo Epstein, we'll replay it for you coming up at noon. He was exceptional today, but more fun with us from the bleachers in Wrigley Field at Spiegel & Parkins on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Joe Ostrowski. This is the Spiegel & Parkins Show from the bleachers at Wrigley Field, brought to you by Boost Mobile. Switch to Boost Mobile and get two lines with 3 gigs of 4G LTE data per line for only $50. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
It's a beautiful day now. The sun has come out, and it's awesome to be out here in the bleachers. Starting to fill up. We got people's all around us, and some want to talk to us. Some would like us to move so they could freely move about this platform, which is usually a delightful place to be.
It still is a delightful place to be.
Yeah,
they
but
just
we're
have to
here.
Deal with you and me.
Yeah, we're here. And, you know, that's frankly, it's a bummer for some of these folks. But you know what?
I'm happy.
We'll be gone soon. Our guy in the kilt with the sandwich board and his little kid.
Yes, it's happening. It's all been happening while you've just been being Matt Spiegel. Yes, it's been amazing though. we have had. Let's see here. We have Jeff Epperson.
Uh-huh.
He is out there in kilts with his son. And
is the son in a kilt too?
Son is in a kilt.
Hmm.
6 years old.
Okay.
And they're walking around in the Spiegel and Parkins sandwich board doing the promotion.
That's awesome.
And he apparently has a theater background, so he's not very shy.
Beautiful.
And so, you know, he's engaging with you. Hey, why are you wearing a sandwich board? Oh, I'm doing it for free tickets for this radio show that's up in the bleachers. He's doing the work.
He's committing to the bit.
That's right.
We appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Good seats we got him too, by the way.
Did we?
Yeah, good seats.
Oh, good seats, hey, buddy. So is he are they Scottish? Is that the background? Do you have any kilt explanation here?
No, I didn't follow up. He just said, I'm willing to wear a kilt in your sandwich board. And I said, sold. Sold to the man who's willing to draw a bunch of attention to our radio show.
Well, we appreciate that. Do your work out there, Jeff. Yes. I think I know Jeff in the social media world. I believe it's a Jeff with a G-E-O-F-F.
It is.
He's one of those guys.
G-off.
Yeah, he's a G-off. Mm. I'm not going to hold
not
that against
J-off.
Him. Yeah, it's not. That doesn't bother me as much as Tom with the H bothers me. Fom. Like Fom Yorke and Fom Brenneman and Fom McCann.
I'm sure
that annoys me.
I know, and I'm sure he's really relieved that his spelling of his name doesn't bother you.
You tell Geoff that it's all right with me if he wants to do that.
You approve.
But thank God.
There will be another time for more listeners to be bribed to give our show free promotion. But someone texted in earlier and said, why a kilt? To which I would say, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Don't complicate it.
Give us your anti-kilt reasons.
Yeah. A guy out there in a kilt at a sandwich board. If you see him, take a picture and tweet it to at @Spiegel_Parkins. Maybe we'll retweet. If you're around the ballpark, find the man in a sandwich board in a kilt. I'm pretty confident he's the only one wearing that outfit today.
You know, we both really enjoyed the nugget from the NBA Jam oral history about the play-by-play guy, the boom shakalaka guy, walking up to people as they play the game and saying boom shakalaka.
Yeah.
Or he also said he would do it like in pickup games, be playing a pickup basketball game at the Y.
Sure.
And he would say, he's hitting up, and people would freak out. And it's completely connected to Ryan Sandberg walking up to people in his own jersey and just tapping them on the shoulder.
Well, the image stuck with me from Vegas because he came to the meet and greet that we did at Mr. Chow at Caesars.
Yes.
He came just in a Cubs polo, right? He looked like he had gotten off the golf course. And there were, because Sandberg was advertised as being there, there were, at one point, three people talking to Ryan Sandberg, two of them wearing Ryan Sandberg jerseys, none of whom were actually Ryan Sandberg. Like, that's just a weird thing that only professional athletes who are great can ever find themselves in that type of situation.
You know, a lot of times you come to a ball game and you're looking around, all right, who do I see? What jersey do I see?
Right.
And he's looking for himself.
He's looking for himself.
Yesterday I saw an A. Young jersey, which I believe has to be for the late Anthony Young, who just died last week, the former Met and former Cub. So shout out to whoever owned and still kept and then represented with the Anthony Young jersey. Nice homage by you, sir.
My philosophy on Cubs jersey growing up was no name on the back. No name, no number. Because I didn't know which player was going to disappoint me or be traded or ultimately fail.
Huh.
And so I didn't buy a Sosa or a Pryor or anything. I was just like, I would go to the games and I'd have usually a Cubs t-shirt on with my jersey open, unbuttoned, and no name on the back.
Those are first world problems.
This is true.
Well, I'm just saying.
If you had a child who asked for a Kyle Schwarber jersey or Scherzy right now, would you still get it for him?
Sure. Of course, I would recommend the Scherzy just as an investment situation of like, you don't want to be the guy who's out here today wearing the Alfonso Soriano. Like, there have been better times since. It was okay when he was here.
Uh-huh.
Like I make an investment in a $200 jersey. You want to get full ROI on
it. You don't want to get a guy who might be traded for Verlander in the next week.
Exactly.
He's not going to.
No,
just referencing
of course.
Some of the rumors.
But I will say, after you win a World Series, it's much safer. Right?
Yes.
Chris Bryant jersey, you're not feeling too bad about.
Damn it! Texter correcting me. It's actually an Angus Young jersey from when AC/DC played at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
Which makes sense. Angus Young, he's a member of AC/DC, Danny.
Is he the A in AC/DC?
AC/DC, a band. Mm. A band from Australia that made the same album every year for about 40 years. It's a pretty good album.
Right.
But
country
singers. They make it every year.
Mm.
But anyway, all right, so damn it, it's not Anthony Young. Well, someday I'll find somebody who loved Anthony Young enough to buy a jersey and keep it for all these years.
Okay, well, tell yourself that's what it was.
Okay.
You don't know that texter's
no,
right.
No, I'm sure he's right. I'm sure he's absolutely right.
Okay. Well, just be confidently wrong. It's the way of sports talk radio.
I'm familiar. Dude,
were you a Jersey kid?
No, I never was. I had a couple of T-shirts, but not even never with the numbers. Although, you know what? I had one. Maybe it was just a hand-me-down. I had a Randy Gratishar Denver Broncos jersey because I don't know why.
I'm sorry I asked.
Because the Orange Crush was badass, man.
Theo Epstein at noon if you missed it. And find the sandwich board man in a kilt for us.
And let's get some bleacher history from Paul Sullivan next.
Okay. Oh, he's right there.
Right there.
Paul Sullivan next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That was Theo Epstein with us you'll hear it in 15 minutes. He was about an hour and 45 minutes ago talking about, I don't think we're going to sell, but I didn't think we'd be here either. So not completely closing the door on a possibility, but saying it'd be very unlikely.
It's an insane thing to realize that you're asking about, but a lot of people have been wondering, and he didn't give it a flat-out no either.
Right. Paul Sullivan. How do you describe Paul Sullivan now?
Baseball Bigfoot.
My God.
That's the phrase that I heard when I was a young producer at the Score, thrown out about Dave Van Dyke or Jerome Holtzman, right?
Jerome was the Dean.
The Dean.
Yeah.
Okay, Jerome.
And I think, Van Dyke was the Bigfoot.
The Bigfoot. Yeah. At least I think Boers used to call Van Dyke the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Now that's you, Paul Sullivan, covering both teams in town.
Yeah.
Been covering baseball in this town for how long?
I think my first trek out here was in 87, maybe.
87 so, as baseball
as
media.
Just starting. And then doing other... I mean, I covered the Bulls, the Bears. I did the whole thing full time since 94.
Okay. So, yeah. Paulie's seen a lot. You've seen really good Cubs teams. You've seen really bad Cubs teams. This is a mediocre Cubs team.
Yeah.
What did Joe Maddon say today about yesterday's... yesterday's loss? You were just over there.
Joe says if there's a way to get your butt kicked properly, the Cubs did it. So,
man, he
Joe
can really
find,
shine one up, can't
he? He can find that silver lining in anything, and he found it. I was wondering how he was going to find it, but he found it.
They got their butt kicked properly.
They did it right. He said that the relievers all did their job after, you know, the game was out of reach, and the batters, the hitters, took the right approaches. They weren't just swinging at anything, and it was vintage Joe.
Vintage Joe positivity.
It's one thing for guys like us to laugh at it or to realize, okay, yeah, all right, Joe. And certain fans are like, oh, look, we know what we're seeing. This is a mediocre baseball team. Do you get the sense that the players are tired of that at all, any of them?
I don't think they pay a whole lot of attention to what he says to the media. You know, this is, third year now. I think they pretty much know that he is Mr. Positivity and that he's going to say these things. And, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. He's not going to be Terry Bevington or I don't know who else of recent vintage, Lou Piniella, that would just like, yeah, we just stink. This is unacceptable. We can't do this. He's not going to change, and I think they just deal with it.
Did I hear a Piniella impression about to start coming out there?
No, I don't do impressions.
Okay, I wasn't sure for a second.
Sorry.
If that was where you were going.
That was an accident.
Speak said, you know, we got to have Paul Sullivan out here to tell us the history of the bleachers.
Oh, my God. That would take forever.
All right, well, so give us, you know, the Reader's Digest.
The Cliff Notes version?
Yeah.
Or at least from your experience.
Oh, my experience.
Because when I was researching some Bill Veeck stuff,
yeah,
I found an article you wrote a long time ago, yeah, about sitting out here with Bill Veeck.
Yeah, in the, like, 81, 82, something around there. We used to sit in the first row of center field. There's a big thing there now that kind of, I don't know if it's a signboard, ad board or something, but you would just have the railing there. You would just lean on the railing and watch the game. It's Bill Veeck. He had a guy named Otto Dutch Denning, who was an old catcher that used to play for the Indians. It was his buddy. And the guy wore a sombrero. Did you ever hear the whole Harry Carey, hey, who's the guy in the sombrero thing? That was Otto.
Who's that guy?
Dutch Denning. And Bill Veeck would bring, like, a basket full of food that, I don't know, Mary Frances cooked it or what, that just hand out, like, lamb chops to people. He had about, and this was before sunscreen was really big. He had about 50 different brands of sunscreen. He would just look at people, well, you need a 50, you need 100. And it was amazing. And I told Spiegel this before, that no one could drink more and hold it better than Bill Veeck. And I was always amazed that you sit up here, because he had a peg leg walking down the bleachers to the bottom bathroom is not easy.
Sure.
But he would drink and drink and drink. And like, wow, this guy.
How many beers?
Take a pee.
Yeah.
Beer?
Beer.
Oh, yeah.
Choice?
Oh, definitely. He was a gulper. Yeah.
A gulper?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you mean? Like, do you think he had a stadium pal on or something? Was there a dialysis bag?
I could never see anything, but I don't know how he did it. It was just amazing. I was always, one thing I'll always remember about it was, because I have a very small bladder, and, you know, about five beers, I'd be up and down every inning. But
not Bill Veeck. All right, so the guy who planted the ivy, Bill Veeck planted the ivy when his dad ran the team.
Yeah.
And the guy who owned the White Sox and did that whole thing comes back, decides to spend his dotage in the bleachers.
Well, he was, I don't know if you remember, he was ticked off at the White Sox because allegedly Eddie Einhorn, or he thought Eddie Einhorn disrespected him when he sold to the Sox and said, well, we're going to run a first-class professional organization now.
Ah.
And he took that as a slight. So he never went back to Sox Park after that.
So he came up here and used to hand out lamb chops in the bleachers.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I wish I had recorded some of the stuff, but I wasn't thinking that I would be a sport. This is way before I was a sports writer, obviously. And I am just a goofy Cub fan sitting in the bleachers.
So, you know, we just were talking to a young lady who is first game at Wrigley, and she's doing it in the bleachers. If someone came up to you, Paul Sullivan, and said, all right, what do I need to know? What do I need to know about the bleachers?
You know, it's so different now. I think back then, you know, it was so cheap that anyone could sit out here, and there was a lot of illegal activities, obviously, in the 70s.
You mean smoking things?
Yeah, kind of like a Tom Petty concert or a Grateful Dead. Like, it's normal now here.
Yeah.
But it was a different atmosphere. You'd have to, depending on where you sat, it's kind of like today. It would fill in from the bottom up, and then center field would be the last one to go. Watch out for that ring.
Yep.
I think every different section has a different vibe to it. And, you know, the real drunken people are lower left field. And I think center field is more older crowd.
That's the thing. It used to be, it's $2 to get out here or whatever it was at different times in your life. And a guy who was struggling to make ends meet could still bring three kids to the ballpark on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And that's how a lot of relationships with this team started for people.
Yeah, I mean, you think of it, there is no other section of seats in any professional sports that is as renowned as the bleachers of Wrigley Field. And I think this week I was doing something is the 80th anniversary of when they started making the new bleachers.
Wow.
So I don't know.
That's why they had us out here.
Is that why you're here?
No. No, but I'll tell myself that it was.
I was sent a picture, which I will tweet out in a matter of moments, of Andre's army, Andre Dawson's army in right field.
Yeah.
And you are in that picture somewhere. It was a Sports Illustrated shot, right? And you're in the picture.
I am in the picture.
As a fan, just hanging out.
Where did you get that?
I have my sources, Paul, in case I ever need to use that.
It was funny. They called them the Admirals of Andre's Army, not knowing that there are no admirals in the Army.
That's a Navy thing.
Small flaw.
Yeah. I'm like microscopic in the picture.
But you made Sports Illustrated as a fan in the bleachers.
As a fan in the bleachers. I think my buddy George Papajohn, a Tribune editor now, is a big shot, and he was there with us and a bunch of people, and
that's pretty cool. Do you think they've retained some of the charm, or as things have changed dramatically and Paul's getting rained on, as we all
I'm not worried about me, I'm worried about my laptop here.
Okay, well, move it if you need to, babe, sorry about that. But we run a small operation here at the Score. No.
Can't control the weather.
We can't control the weather, exactly.
Yeah.
But do you think even with all the video boards and the signage and the huge price and everything like that has retained some of the vibe when you come out here?
Yeah. I think it's, it's still the bleachers. It's still, if it's a nice, beautiful, sunny day, it's the best place to sit. And you got the, relationship with the players, the outfielders.
Yeah.
Always cool, the ivies. Cool. We used to be able to reach down and grab the ivy. I guess I don't think you can do that now. You'd probably get arrested.
Yeah.
But it's still a great place. A little overpriced, but
overpriced.
But it's still one of those few places where, like, the social aspect, you got to get up and make room for people. People will offer to save your seat if you're going to. I mean, like, you end up in conversations with randoms because you have to.
Definitely, there's way more conversations. Probably more relationships sprout here, like the Ricketts,
Tom
Ricketts. It used to be a lot like a lower class of people, including myself. I remember when Lonnie Smith, during the whole cocaine trials, some guy brought out like a fishing pole and put a baggie full of flour on it. He was out here shagging flour. Is it just like, hey, Lonnie?
Taunting him with fake cocaine.
Yeah, it was a lot funnier back then.
Yeah, keeping it classy.
That is pretty good.
Yeah, you can't get away with that kind of stuff anymore.
Not so much.
Ah, the old days. All right, two quick predictions from Baseball Bigfoot. Do the Cubs make the playoffs?
Barely.
All right, does Quintana get traded?
No, I don't. I think they got to wait till he's jacks his price up a little bit. He's not doing well enough.
Not well enough.
Okay.
There it is.
Two predictions from Paul Sullivan.
Read Paul Sullivan in the Tribune. I bring you up when I disagree, and like I did about a Montero thing. We'll talk about it off the air. But
I forgot about that.
Right?
Oh, I disagree, too.
Okay.
Yeah. With that Montero column? Yeah, I disagree with that.
And you disagree with your own Montero
yes,
column?
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. All right, then maybe I don't disagree. Well, we'll figure it out. But anyway, thanks for walking over, man.
All right, hey, thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. This segment brought to you by Four Winds Casinos in nearby Southwest Michigan for gaming, for dining, for entertainment, for adventure. Four Winds Casinos, your entertainment escape. If you missed Theo Epstein, if I do say so myself, we conducted an exceptional conversation and interview with him.
It was really good. He's edgy. He's not in a good mood.
Exactly.
And he knows it.
It's a raw conversation with Theo Epstein. You'll hear it next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.